Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on a plan for the future when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Now, Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him back in 1880 by the leaders of his craft, the journalists. And someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. And Swinton outraged all of his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history, 1880, in America, as an independent press. Now you know it and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions. And if you did, you know beforehand it would never appear in print. Now I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things. And any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Now, the business of a journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? Now, we are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings. We dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, you know, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program. That's this New World Order. It's the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. Now let's wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham, and let's stop following after all these crazy scientists and philosophers and preachers and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and to survive this New World Order and this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order our free 4-hour compact disc package. That's the place to start. It's free. It's educational. It's entertaining. It's informative. And the best part is it doesn't cost you anything. Why don't you call right now and order one? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. Well, recently I've been receiving a lot of telephone calls, mainly phone calls. And students, when they come through the doors, they'll sit down, and one of the first things they want to know from me is, how is this economic crisis going to play out? Like I'm a prophet, like I have some kind of a sixth sense. I'm a Daniel or a Moses, you know, and God talks to me every day. And sometimes they get kind of insistent. I had a student the other day, and he just kept boring in on me. Said, you know, what's going to happen? What do you think? And I told the young man, I said, you know, what I think is irrelevant and immaterial. It doesn't make any difference what I think. I can't bring any of this to pass. I can't do any of this. I can't make it happen. I can't prevent it from happening. I can't advance it a day. I can't retard it a day. I can report on it. I can tell you what's going on around me. Past tense. But when you want to know what's going to happen in the future, what's going to happen in the future? People want to go, like my grandmother would not leave the house until she had consulted with the American Astrology Magazine to read her horoscope so that she would know what the future held. We see this when we eat in a Chinese restaurant. You get a fortune cookie for dessert, and inside of it there'll be a little message in there that says you're going to hit the lottery, or you're going to marry, and you're going to have great success, or you're going to have lots of children, or, you know, all this good stuff is going to happen to you. Well, now, this issue of prophecy has come up in the history of mankind more than once. And Daniel made an observation concerning a God in heaven who could reveal these secrets. So if you want to know how something's going to come out over the long haul, we consult with Bible prophecy. There's another modality that's very instructive for human beings, and that is experience. In other words, we can go through life and through experience, and God in the Bible tells you to rise up before the hoary head. Old people who have had experience are a better source of information for you than your college professor or your teachers and your friends and your peers, because they've actually lived through it. As an example, I'll go back to the Titanic. We learned a lot from the Titanic, and we can make prophecy from it. And that is, ships that hit icebergs sink. Ships that hit icebergs sink. And so, if you're a sailor, or if you're a mariner, or you're a passenger, based upon the experiences of the past, we know, and you probably heard the story about the Titanic hitting an iceberg and sinking. And they thought it was unsinkable, and they said so. They advertised it. They said, hey, this ship's got watertight doors in it, and it's unsinkable. It always made me believe that God himself probably sank the Titanic just to show us that we weren't quite as smart as we thought we were, but I don't know that positively. But, you know, for a ship to sink on its maiden voyage, you know, and with 1,500 people dead, that's quite a little story. It's quite a little statement. But now, when we build ships, we build them with watertight doors. Well, you know, we've been doing that for a long time. But we don't claim that our ships are unsinkable anymore. We don't make statements like, well, God himself couldn't sink this ship. We're a little more humbled, I think, by the Titanic. And they came up with a new plan. They said every ship that sails needs to have lifeboats on board for everybody on board, both the crew and the passengers. See, the Titanic only had half enough lifeboats. I don't know what they were thinking about when they put on half enough lifeboats. It's either one, you don't need any because the ship can't sink, or two, you need lifeboats for everybody. But they just put on half enough. So the bottom line is, the moral to the story is that you and I can learn from our own experiences. So when we take a look at the world today, I would contend that we need a plan for the future, starting right now, you know, today. What are you going to do over the next 10, 15, 20 years? You know, how are you going to live your life? Because we're heading into a period, a black hole, an economic black hole. And we've been through these economic black holes before. The world has gone through depressions over and over and over and over again. And we have never learned from these depressions. That is, you know, all of us as a collective group, nations and empires and city-states and so on, they've never learned this lesson concerning economic collapse. And it's revealed in the Bible. God, the creator of the universe, set an economic plan in motion. And there's laws that govern economics. I don't know if you knew that or not, but there's 15 laws that govern these economics. And if you violate one or more of those economic laws, then there's a penalty to pay. And I've mentioned this before, there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. If you could have a law without a penalty, you wouldn't have a law, you would have a suggestion. I suggest that you go to bed. I suggest that you get your car tuned up. I suggest. If there's a law involved, then there is a penalty, whether the penalty is artificial, that is added on, or it's automatic. Kind of like AIDS, herpes, and VD are the automatic penalties for adultery. Now, in the real world out here, the penalties that come down for the violation of laws in the Bible, such as the Ten Commandments, are automatic. It doesn't require a policeman with a radar detector to measure your speed to determine that you're breaking the law. It doesn't take that at all. It's built right into the program. It's automatic. If you're sailing a ship and you run it into an iceberg, you might as well run it into a rock. It's going to tear a big hole in the ship. And water's going to come in, the ship's going to sink. I mean, that's just the way it is. It isn't that way because I say it is. It isn't that way because that's the way I'd like it to be. It's just the way life is. And we can make these observations. So my old daddy explained it to me one time. I was about 12 years old. And he said, son, experience is the best teacher. And that's because when you learn from experience, you will never forget it. But, he added, it is a God-awful hard way to learn. And then he said to me, he said, the next time you come up with one of your harebrained ideas, run it by me first. Come and tell me what it is that you have in mind to experiment with. And then I will tell you how it came out when I did it. When I did it, I'll tell you how that came out. Now, young people believe that old people have not experienced life. You know, as we go through our technological society and we come up with things, you know, like the CD-ROM or the CD-Disc or the DTV, it comes to the mind of a young person, well, what does my dad or granddad or somebody else know about the world? Because, hell, they didn't even have iPods when they were young. Well, boys and girls, that's true. We didn't have iPods, but that didn't mean that we didn't have communications. You see, we did have pens, even though they might have been the feathers out of a turkey. And maybe our ink was made out of some herb and water. We were still able to communicate. That's where the bottom line is. Now, it may be true that you have some technological marvels and innovations, but when it gets right down to the bottom line, there really isn't anything new on planet Earth. And Solomon told us that 3,000 years ago. You know, the water runs into the ocean, and the sun comes up, and the birds sing, and the sun goes down, and the birds roost. But there's no new thing under the sun. So if you think that you've come up with something new out there, kids, well, then dream on. But there's no new thing under the sun. And the world goes on. It has gone on. And we, the old people with gray hair, have already lived through it. Not with iPods, but we lived through it with phonograph records. See? I mean, music's been around for a long time. And it's going to be around for a long time to come. And there are going to be new ways to record it and disseminate it. But you haven't invented music because you put it on a CD or an iPod. The invention of music's been around for years and years. Now, the same thing is true with economics. The same thing is true with war and social problems and social studies. And from time to time, we deviate from a tried and true modality. For instance, here in the United States, in my lifetime, I have witnessed the deviation in economics from gold and silver coin to fiat paper currency. I saw it with my own eyeballs. I lived through it. And my dad lived through, and my grandparents lived through the 1930s depressions, and they passed on to me their wisdom. And then I observed some of my own wisdom, and now as an old man, I look back and I say, well, I see what happened here. But when you're 25, 30, or 40 years old, you see, you haven't experienced that yet. You could have known it by looking at the history books, but you probably didn't, especially if you were educated in public school. And that's because the public schools actually work a disservice. They don't teach you to learn from your mistakes. They don't teach you to learn from the Scripture. You went to church every week, but nobody taught you about Bible prophecy. You learned about faith, and you learned about Jesus, and you learned about Christmas, but you didn't learn about Bible prophecy. Now, there is a God in heaven who does foretell the future, and that's called prophecy. And prophecy is unique from experience. It's different than experience. It's something unique. And it can only be done by somebody who has the power to bring it to pass, who can actually do it. So when we look in the Bible and we see a statement by Jesus that says, "And earthquakes shall be increased," in Matthew 24. So I took a look in the Wikipedia, and I started looking at earthquakes dating back to the great Lisbon earthquake in 1752, I believe it was, something like that, 52, 56. And I carried it forward, and sure enough, in looking at Matthew 24, where it says, "And earthquakes shall be here and there," have earthquakes always been here on planet Earth? And the answer is yes, they have. And as far as we know, looking back into history, looking back into ancient times, people have recorded with their quills and pens, and sometimes by their chisels, etching it into the rocks, that yes, there have been earthquakes. Are these earthquakes becoming more frequent and more powerful? And the answer to that is yes, they have. They have become more frequent and more powerful. Now, in looking at the last 100 years, we find that we're seeing earthquakes come more frequently and more powerfully, which fulfills a prophecy in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. Okay, that's one example. I cannot produce an earthquake. And in fact, so far, we have not been very good at being predictors of earthquakes. We have instruments out here, and we're trying to figure out, you know, what's going to happen. I noticed up there, based upon Mount St. Helens, they went up to Mount Rainier, and they've got 126 instruments sitting on the mountain. The mountain is actually expanding, and the mountain is showing signs of volcanic activity. In the past, it has blown up. That's what science tells us, is blown up like Mount St. Helens. It lies dormant for hundreds of years, and all of a sudden it blows up, causes massive earthquakes, landslides, volcanic eruptions, and kills a bunch of people. It's done it in the past, and it's in the process of getting ready to do it again. So, human beings actually have some limited capacity for prophecy. And so they say, well, Mount Rainier is going to erupt again. And I think that's a pretty safe bet. When is it going to erupt? We haven't got a clue. Next year? 5 years from now? 100 years from now? We don't know. But when they say it's going to erupt again, that's an adjunct of prophecy because of experience. We know that it's done it in the past. And we got a chance to see Mount St. Helens. And then so we can put two and two together and we can come to a conclusion. And as a result of that, we can make a plan for the future. So let's think about this. If Mount Rainier blows up, is that going to affect property values in Seattle, Washington? Is that going to affect property values in Puyallup, Washington? I think it will. So my common sense says, based upon my experience and my age and so on, that living in downtown Puyallup, Washington is not a good place to be. And that property values are going to be affected in Seattle. So even though the mountain hasn't blown up for 400, 500, 600 years, and even though we don't know when it's going to blow up, the seismic reports that I have seen on Mount Rainier tells me that that thing is expanding, and they're actually measuring it today, and that there is seismic activity going on around the mountain, And there's every reason to believe that it's going to explode. And when it explodes, in the past, it has actually run rivers of mud all the way down to Puget Sound. And that's somewhere around 60 miles, I think. It's a long ways from the mountain over to Puget Sound. And they're up there, you know, drilling boreholes in the ground and taking up sediment samples and taking a look at boulders that have been blown out of the mountain. They're clear out to Seattle, 60 miles away. I was over in Redding, California, and when you leave Redding and you're going up into the hills toward Mount Lassen, there are big boulders out there, big volcanic boulders, clear down to Redding, which is, 60, 70, 80 miles from the volcano. So there are times in the past when that volcano, when it blew up, that it has blown big boulders the size of cars, 80 miles. Now, then they're out there in the countryside, you know, and they're just like like drops of hail all over the countryside out there. I mean, thousands of these rocks and boulders. Now, if you were standing out there while these things are falling down around you, it's true that if you were standing in the right spot, you might not get hit by one. But, you know, there's every reason to believe that with boulders the size of cars falling all around you, that would be a pretty scary time. So my common sense says that it would probably be better for us to be somewhere else other than Mount Rainier. So if you were to ask me, what do you think of property values in the Seattle area? I'd say sell and move. Just sell and move. Because when the mountain begins to erupt, property values are going to sink rapidly. Now, looking back recently on what's been going on around us, could we have predicted this economic crisis? And the answer is absolutely, no doubt about it. In fact, the guy that was predicting this and yelling and tooting his horn the longest and the loudest was Bob Chapman, the editor of the International Forecaster newsletter that I recommend to you so often, because it's the biggest and the best, and because he's an old man with gray hair like me, and so he's been around for a long time, and he's been in the investment business. He was a stockbroker for many years. In fact, he may still be, I don't know. But he was in stocks, and he buys and sells stocks and bonds and gold and silver and investments and one thing and another. So he has some advice, and he says, well, here's what I would do. I would get out of the American dollar, the U.S. dollar, and I would buy gold and silver coin. And the reason I would do that is because there's an economic collapse coming. The dollar is going to collapse. Now, how do we know that? How do we know that this guy, Bob Chapman, is right about that prediction? Now, let me tell you how he can know that. Because we here in the United States of America have been through this before. I know most of you people out there sitting there saying, well, when? I don't believe it. Why, I don't remember that. Well, hell, you're only 25 or 30 years old, son. How in the hell would you remember something that occurred between 1692 and 1754? Do you remember the economic collapse that occurred back in the days of Adam Smith? Did you read about it when you went to college? Okay. Then from 1754, we went back in a limited way to gold and silver, and then we went back to paper money again. And the continental currency collapsed in 1783, and there was a Great Depression from 1783 to 1790. Do you remember that? Hell no, you weren't alive then. You didn't know that. But you could have known, because it's been written down. And no, we didn't have iPods. And no, we didn't have television. But we had communication. Now, if you went to public school and you didn't hear about the collapse of 1783, well, then that's not my fault. I heard about it. Now, from 1787 on, our founding fathers, from their vantage point, they looked at the continental currency collapse, and they looked at the colonies, one by one, who adopted fiat paper currency and how their economies collapsed, and they went through that, and they wrote into our Constitution these 17 words. It says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now, I came on the scene here in 1939, so I'm a relatively newcomer to planet Earth. But I heard from my parents and grandparents about gold and silver coin, because we had gold and silver coin up to 1933. Just 6 years before I was born, we had gold coin in the United States of America, and our President Roosevelt took it away. Have governments ever done that before? Yes, yes. Many, many times. Is there a result that comes from it? Yes, yes. Economic collapse every single time throughout history without fail. When? When? In usually 50 years. In the case of the United States in this round from 1933 on, it has taken about 70 years, 80 years. Does it always happen? Yes, yes, without fail. Could we have predicted this economic collapse? Yes, yes. And writers and newsletter writers have been doing it for the last 30 years. Now, the problem is that nobody can ever tell you exactly when it's going to happen. We don't know that 2008, August of 2007, is going to be a watershed month. Or that in October, November of 2008, the bottom is going to fall out. See, that's where we fall down. We're not able to tell with specificity when the earthquake is going to come, just that based upon our experience in Los Angeles and San Francisco, we can tell you with certainty, yes, San Francisco is going to have another earthquake like it had in 1906. When is it going to happen? Anytime. Is it going to happen this year? I've got a clue. What do you think about real estate values in San Francisco? Sell now and relocate. It's just that simple. No big mystery. Now, does that mean the people in San Francisco are going to sell now, move out, and relocate? No. No, not at all. Are they going to go through the earthquake and have their houses knocked down and go through a great trauma like they did in 1906? Absolutely. Well, why is that? Because they can't learn from history. They can't learn from Bible prophecy. Why can't they learn? Well, because they're filled with vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, and they won't obey God and keep His commandments. That's the bottom line. It's been the history for the last 5,000 years. No, see any reason for it to change in the next week or 10 days. Now, for you out there personally, you know, there's an iconoclast or two in San Francisco and Oakland, and there's an iconoclast or two, you know, around Seattle. And so these are people that take a look around and say, my God, you know, if this has happened before and if it's going to happen again, this probably isn't a very good place for me to be. Riding on the Titanic was not a good place to be. But, you know, they wanted to sail on the unsinkable ship. By God, they found out that that ship was sinkable, just like all ships built before and all ships built after that. Some of the best ships that have ever been built are aircraft carriers. And nobody says that an aircraft carrier is unsinkable anymore. And they're built with more watertight doors than the Titanic or a cruise ship from the Carnival Lines. And so aircraft carriers have been torpedoed and sunk in the past. And they will be torpedoed and sunk in the future. And the aircraft carriers are neat ships, and they're less likely to sink than the average rowboat, but that does not mean that they're unsinkable. And so you ought to take that into consideration, you know, when you get on board. You know, hey, this thing isn't exactly unsinkable, and so maybe we should make plans for an eventuality. And so this is what I call Plan A, Plan B, and Plan C. So when I do my subsistence and survival school, we base it upon Bible prophecy. We take a look at Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. And we combine that with Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26 and then Revelation 6 through 18. And we say, well, what is going to happen in the future? And we can tell with certainty what's going to happen in the future. What we cannot tell is when is it going to happen in the future. That's the imponderable. That's the thing that we can't tell as mere mortals over here. But we can get a pretty good indication from the Creator Himself. So let me give you a reminder here, if I find my paper, at the halfway point. And then let's investigate a plan for the future based upon Bible prophecy. It's a wild new concept. Should I sell my house in Seattle, San Francisco, and Los Angeles and relocate to another location? Should I have sold my house in 2005 when the real estate market reached its peak? Should I buy gold and silver coin today? Or should I buy treasury bills and stocks and bonds? Have we reached the bottom of the economic cycle, and is this the time for me to get into the real estate market? These and other questions we'll answer from the pages of the Bible right after this. Now, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not 8 schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour and editorial review is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. We should all keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that I cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, now oftentimes I get accused of being some kind of a cult leader, and maybe I'm a religious fanatic or something like that. I deny that. I dissent from those opinions. We're not here to promote religion one way or the other. In fact, it's my opinion that religion has been the problem with the human condition more than it has been a solution for the human condition or the problems that arise from it. But there's a big difference between religion and Bible prophecy. The religious people, the Christians and the Buddhists and the religious guys around the world, you know, they haven't got a clue as to what's coming in the future. And when it comes to Bible prophecy, there's very few people that even give it the time of day. I mean, you don't go to church and listen to Bible prophecy. You know, last time, just picture this. When was the last time you went to church and the preacher said, well, let's take a look at Bible prophecy from the perspective of Moses in Deuteronomy 28, or Daniel in Daniel 12, or Jesus in Matthew 24. I went to church a time or two, you know, in my life, and I can tell you from practical experience that you're not very likely to see that. No, there are a few little churches around the country that talk about Bible prophecy. I'm not saying that it's a lost art, but as a general rule, you know, in the major denominations, you know, the think goody-goody two-shoes type religions, you know, and feel-good kind of religion, they don't talk about that at all. And that's because the Bible isn't a religious book, it's a law book. And it's divided into three major topics: history, which doesn't have much to do with religion. And it has a lot to do with prophecy, which doesn't have very much to do with religion. And law, which has virtually nothing to do with religion. So you can go to church until hell freezes over, and you're not going to hear much about law, or prophecy, or history. You're going to hear a lot about turning around three times and shaking bat's knuckles under the full moon or something like that, and going to church, and love your neighbor, and love, and faith, and... But when it comes right down to the nitty-gritty, when it comes right down to what people are asking me, you know, well, how's this economic collapse going to play out? They haven't got a clue. They don't know. They could know, but they don't, and they won't. And it's because they don't follow the guidelines that the Bible sets down. The creator of the universe has revealed secrets, and there's a code in the Bible. The Bible is written in code. And without that code, you won't be able to understand it. And so one of the first things people say to me, I don't understand the Bible, Mr. Gordon. I just can't understand it. And that's exactly right. And when somebody comes in here and says, well, I understand the Bible, I look at them kind of askance, and I say, you do? Is that right? Oh, yeah? Now, let's take a look, first of all, at what do we have to do to understand it? Because it's written in code. How do I know that? Well, in Isaiah 28, verses 9 through 13, it tells us that it's written in code. And then the code is explained in Matthew chapter 13, about verses 1 through 17. So if you put those two together, just write this down now, and I'll show you how to do this for yourself. You can find out from God himself. Now, there's a little factoid here that comes with understanding, and that's kind of scattered here in the scripture also. So let's take a look here at this little factoid. In Psalm 111, verse 10, we learn a little something here. It says, a good understanding of all they who do his commandments. Well, now, in law, sometimes, in fact, oftentimes, what isn't said is more eloquent than what is said. And that is, sometimes what isn't said will tell you from what has been said what it is you need to know. And this is a good example of that. The statement says, a good understanding have all they who do his commandments. The opposite to that is, a poor understanding have all they who do not do all of his commandments. So the better you practice the laws, the better you practice the Ten Commandments, the better you practice the statutes, the judgments, and commandments in the Scripture, then the better your understanding will be. I didn't make it that way. I can't change it. But as a reporter, I can report it. Now, oftentimes, people will say to me, I don't believe that. And I tell them, I don't care. I'm not here to persuade you that I'm right and you're wrong. I don't care whether you believe it or not. It's not relevant to me. It's no skin off my back, as one old high school teacher used to tell me. It's no skin off my back one way or the other. After all, when people walk in my door and they say, can you tell me the answer to this? And I say, yeah, I think I can tell you the answer to that. And then when I tell them the answer, the guy says, I don't believe it. I don't care. You ask me plainly. And I told you plainly. Now, if you didn't want to know, why did you ask? Because I'm not going out here asking you, how is this economic crisis going to play out? How is President Obama's economic plans for the future going to pan out? Are we going to have a Great Depression? Are we going to have a runaway inflation? Are we going to have Mount Rainier blow up and wreck our property values in the Puyallup Valley? The answer to all of that is, yep, Mount Rainier is going to blow up. And then, yes, it's going to wreck your property values in the Puyallup Valley. And it is going to wreck your property values in Olympia, Tacoma, and Seattle. How do you like that? Probably as far north as Bellingham. Maybe as far south as Portland. I don't know. but it's certainly gonna affect your property values up there. Now, how do I know that that's going to happen? Well, because God Almighty, the creator of the universe, said it's going to happen. He says, this is what I'm going to do. I think you can take that to the bank. Now, this is my personal opinion. Now, a lot of people will say, well, I don't believe that. Well, it's fine. When was the last time anybody believed God? Did anybody believe God when he sent two angels to Sodom and Gomorrah? Did anybody believe Moses when he went to Pharaoh and said, hey, you got 10 plagues coming? Did anybody believe Joseph when he said there's a big famine coming? Well, the answer to that is yes, some people did and benefited from it. And no, most people didn't, and they were not benefited from it. In fact, they were cursed by it. Now, you know, if I'd have told somebody, you know, on the docks over in France, you know, hey, don't get on the Titanic because this thing's going to sink on its maiden voyage, you know, you'd look at me and say, you're some kind of a nut. And that's because I didn't know if it was going to sink on its maiden voyage or not, and I couldn't tell you from experience, which is mankind's tool. Experience is our tool. I would have said, I don't believe that this ship is unsinkable. I don't believe that. And I don't believe it's very wise to sail a ship without enough lifeboats on it. I don't think that that's very good. But did I know that the Titanic was going to sink on its maiden voyage? No, I don't think anybody else did. Only God knew if, in fact, he's the one that sank it. And he ain't talking, and we won't find that out until we get past the first resurrection. So that's one of the things I plan to ask him. Did you sink the Titanic on purpose just to show us that you could, or that our technology wasn't as vaunted as we thought it was? I don't know what his answer is going to be, but I'm sure he'll tell me if I ask him. There's a lot of things I'm curious about historically. Why did you do this? Why did you do that? You know, why did you destroy Sodom and Gomorrah? And you said later on, if the people of Sodom and Gomorrah had known what you people know here today, they would have repented in sackcloth and ashes. Why didn't you tell them so that they would have an opportunity to repent in sackcloth and ashes? Or did you do that because you wanted to demonstrate an object lesson for sodomy and homosexuality for the next 5,000 years? What was your thinking on that? I'm sure if I ask him, I'm sure he's going to tell me. Now, in many cases, he has actually told us what his thinking is. And so in Isaiah 28, write this down, Isaiah 28, verses 9 through 13, he tells you that the Bible is written in code, and that there's a way for you to understand what that code is. So if you want to understand Bible prophecy, you got to understand this code. And if you don't understand this code, you're not going to understand Bible prophecy. It's that simple. It's no big mystery. And where did I get that information? He told me right here. He told me that a good understanding of all they who do his commandments. And so you have to obey God and keep his commandments. And if you don't do that, you're not going to have a good understanding. Listen to this. He says, whom shall he teach knowledge, and whom shall he make to understand doctrine? That's a question. Whom shall he teach knowledge, and whom shall he make to understand doctrine? You want to understand doctrine? You want to have some knowledge? Okay, listen to this. He says, them that are weaned from the milk and drawn from the breasts. So you can't be a suckling baby. You're going to have to be somebody that eats, as Paul pointed out, it's a strong meat. Are you able to eat strong meat, or are you still on the milk of the word? You're still out here drinking milk, sucking on your mother's breast. So if you want to have understanding here, you've got to be weaned from the milk and drawn from the breasts. For precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept. Now that's statute upon statute and statute upon statute. Line upon line, line upon line. Here a little and there a little. For with stammering lips and another tongue will I speak to this people. So he says, now plainly, listen up. Pay attention. He says, I'm going to speak to you people in German and stutter at the same time. Now, what do you think your chances of understanding that's going to be? First of all, people that stutter have to be listened to very carefully. in order for you to understand what it is they're trying to tell you. And then number two, if the guy's speaking to you in German, then you have to understand German. If he's speaking to you in Chinese, then you have to understand Chainese. Well, God's telling you, replying, I'm going to speak to you people in a strange language and stutter. Now, why is he doing that? Because I remember my Sunday school teacher, you know, when I was in the Sunday school one day, a question came up, why did Jesus speak in parables? And the reason Jesus spoke in parables is because he didn't want you to understand what he was telling you. Because if you understood, you'd be responsible for that knowledge. You would be responsible for your actions. So it may be better for you that you don't understand Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14 as it relates to unclean and clean animals to eat. Has it ever occurred to you that God's working out a plan here and he knows what he's doing? I don't think most people think he knows what he's doing. All right, now, verse 13 adds something to that. He says, but the word of the Eternal was unto them precept upon precept, precept upon precept. Now, that word precept means statute. We're talking law here. Law. Statute upon statute. Statute upon statute. Line upon line. Line upon line. Here a little and there a little. That they might go and fall backward and be broken and snared and taken. The purpose for writing the Bible in this code, line upon line, here a little, there a little, is so that you can't understand it, so that you will fall backward and be broken and snared and taken. That's the purpose behind it. And why? Well, because you don't obey God and keep his commandments. And that's because a good understanding of all they who do his commandments. Now go to Psalm 111:10. And here's God, he comes along and he says, now, do you want to have a good understanding of this economic collapse? Do you want to have a good understanding of Barack Obama and the Democratic Party and the Congress of the United States in their attempts to deal with this economic collapse? The United Nations and how that fits in. Do you want to understand how that works? Okay. Well, God in the Bible tells you, here's the ultimate end of this. Here's how this deal's going to come down. How do I know that? Because that's what he tells me. How do I know that? Because I obey God and keep his commandments. So I have a good understanding. Now, let's turn over here to Proverbs 9, verse 10. So far, here's what you should have written down so you can check me out and see if I'm lying to you. Okay? You start out here with Isaiah 28, verses 9 through 13. Isaiah 28, 9 through 13. Then couple that with Psalm 111, verse 10, talking about understanding. Now, let's flip over here to Proverbs 9, verse 10. That's Proverbs 9, verse 10. And there's a little statement in here about understanding. And then there's a second statement in Proverbs 1, verse 7. So if we go to Proverbs 1, verse 7, and Proverbs 9, verse 10. Got that down, Charlie? All right. Here's Proverbs 9, 10. Listen to this. He says, the fear of the Eternal is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Scripture is understanding. Now remember, line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. So we want to know what understanding is. It's a good understanding of all they who do his commandments. Well, what is understanding? It's a knowledge of the Scripture. A good understanding is knowledge of the Scripture. Proverbs 1, verse 7 tells you the same thing. It says, but the fear of the Eternal is the beginning of knowledge. The fear of the Eternal is the beginning of knowledge. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. Fools despise wisdom. Fools despise instruction. Right? Now, gives us a little understanding here of what this Creator is doing. Now, let's flip over here to Matthew chapter 13. And here's Jesus. Now, you Christians out there, you can follow along with this. You see, the Christians believe, at least most of them do, that the Old Testament's been abolished and done away with, and that you don't have to follow that anymore, see. Now, there's a problem with that line of reasoning. And in Luke 6, verse 46, Jesus made a statement. He said, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not those things which I say? That's in Luke 6, verse 46. Jot that down. Why do you call Jesus Lord, and you don't do a damn thing he tells you? Huh? Why is that? That's what he asked you. That's not me asking you. That's what he asked you. Because in Matthew 5:17 through 20, he said, think not that I've come to destroy the law or the prophets. I didn't come to destroy, but to fulfill. And what do you people think? He came to destroy the law and the prophets. I'm telling you, boys and girls, if God told you to stand up, you'd sit down. If he told you to come here, you'd run away. If he told you to get the hell out of here, you'd come near and say, oh, Jesus. We human beings have not followed our Creator's instructions. We haven't followed his advice. And as a result of that, he has a response. I mean, you know, he's just like you and me and anybody else, you know, when it comes to, hey, I told you, and you didn't listen. So, you know, if you want to give him the finger, he's going to respond to you in the same way. You know, if you want to test it, you just walk into a bar, walk up to some big, dirty, greasy Hell's Angel with an earring in his ear, give him the international flag of distress, and tip his beer into his lap and then see what happens. I think it's pretty predictable. You can figure that out for yourself, you know. You don't have to be a genius, you know. If you're not too bright and you can't understand that, why don't you test it once? Go experiment. Now, in Matthew chapter 13, there's a parable here. It's called the parable of the sower. And in the parable of the sower, Jesus is telling a story. And he tells the story by way of a parable. It's an analogy. It's a little simile. He's telling a little story over here. And he's talking about a guy that goes out and he's sowing his field with seed. And he says some of the seed falls on good ground and it produces 60, 90, or 100 bushels. Some of it falls on some marginal ground over here and it takes root and it grows, but it doesn't have any depth of earth. And so therefore, when the sun comes out, it dries up and it's scorched, and some of it falls, you know, and the weeds choke it out, and the brambles and the berry bushes and so on. And so, in verse 10, his disciples come up to him and say, Hey, boss, we hear what you're telling these people, but we don't understand it. And they ask him a question. He says, why do you speak to these people in parables? Now, I remember I was in 10, 12 years old, something like that, and I'm in a Sunday school class. Mrs. Ray, the Sunday school teacher, is going through this parable of the sower. And then the question came up. Now, why does Jesus speak in parables? And the answer in the Sunday school lesson, this is the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, the answer is, in the Sunday school material, it says, Jesus spoke in parables so that the people who were ignorant farmers. I want you to read this, Matthew 13. You tell me what these people's occupation was. Write me an email and show me where they're ignorant farmers. In fact, ignorant farmers, write me another email and tell me what their educational level was. I read this chapter and I couldn't find any educational level. I couldn't find any occupations referred. But the Sunday school lesson said they were ignorant farmers. They told us their occupation, told us their educational status. They were ignorant. And that he spoke in parables so that they could better understand the meaning of his words, so that they could be saved and go to heaven and be with Jesus. Now, that's religion for you. That's not what this chapter says. That's not what the Bible teaches. That's not what the Scripture tells us. And that's not what Jesus said here. Listen to this. In verse 9, he tells him, who has ears to hear, let him hear. If you got an ear to hear, pay attention. And in verse 10, the disciples came and said to him, well, why do you speak to them in parables? And he answered. Jesus, he answered. And he said unto them, because it's given to you to know the mystery of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. Every once in a while, I have religious guys, you know, that come through school here, you know, and they tell me about Jesus and him crucified, and they ask me, you know, are you saved? a couple Mormon kids one time. They came up the door and they asked me, do you know Jesus? I said, no. Does he live here in the neighborhood? And wanted to know if I'd been saved. I said, saved from what? Saved from what? I didn't know I was in any danger. I was sitting here in my living room doing some paperwork. And is there an earthquake coming? Is there a tornado on the way? Is there a hurricane blowing in? What's the danger? What's the problem? See, the religious people, they have, you know, their modalities, and they come and they knock on your door and they ask you these questions. What they're doing is it's called proselyting. They want you to join their church. They're out selling their church. They want you to join the Jehovah's Witnesses or join the Mormons or join this or join that or join something else, you know. It's kind of like somebody knocks on your door and says, are you going to vote for Barack Obama? You're going to vote for John McCain? They want to sell you something here. So here's Jesus. He says, hey, listen, I'm speaking to these people in parables so that they can't understand a word I'm saying. Well, what in the hell is he talking to them for? You know, you ever stop and think about that? If he doesn't want them to understand, why doesn't he zip his lip and shut up? Well, because he's fulfilling a Bible prophecy. He answered and said unto them, because it's given unto you to know the mystery of the kingdom of heaven, to them it's not giving. For whosoever has, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance. But whosoever has not, from him shall be taken away even that which he has. Therefore speak I to them in parables, because they seeing, they see not, and hearing, they hear not, and neither do they understand. These people don't have any understanding of the Scripture. They don't have any understanding of Bible prophecy. And in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which says, by hearing you shall hear, and you shall not understand, and seeing you shall see, and you shall not perceive. Because this people's heart is waxed gross, their ears are dull of hearing, their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and should understand with their heart, and should be converted, and I should heal them. You see, boys and girls, you're responsible for what you know. And the more you know, the more responsible you are, and the more responsible or the higher standard you're going to be held to. Now, there's three resurrections. See, you religious people out there, you believe you're going to go to heaven when you die. That's poppycock. You're not going to heaven. You're going into a hole in the ground called hell. You're going to die and be buried, and your body's going to rot away. But there is a resurrection coming, and you're going to be resurrected to a new body. Some of them physical, and some of them spiritual. But you're going to be resurrected. And if you go to Revelation 20, it'll tell you about all three of those resurrections. So, the moral to the story over here is that the Bible is written in code. It's written in code so that you won't understand it. And it fulfills Bible prophecy, a good understanding of all they who do His commandments. And so all you people out there that will not obey God and keep His commandments, you have a poor understanding. So you're not going to grasp what I'm going to tell you. So you can just take this week off and go do something else more constructive. And then come back next week and we'll talk about something that you can understand. How's that? Hey, I'm about out of time here again. And I'm going to have to remind you that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on a compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, our time's about up. We're going to have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.